sound of hoofbeats on the ice.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair, and I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am stuck in the middle with you. Oh, yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you, and I'm wondering what it is I should do. It's so hard to keep this smile from my face, losing control, and I'm all over the place. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am stuck in the middle with you. Well, you started off with nothing, and you're proud that you're a self-made man. And your friends, they call, come crawling, slap you on the back and say, please, please. I'm trying to make some sense of it all, but I can see it makes no sense at all. Is it cool to go to sleep on the floor? 'Cause I don't think I can take any more. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am stuck in the middle with you. Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you. Stuck in the middle with you. Actually, I'm not feeling particularly stuck tonight. Don't get the wrong idea. Lorraine and I were watching an episode of Grace and Frankie this morning, and I noticed we were both singing along with the theme song. So I thought, heck, that's a good thing to use for the show. You know, if you haven't seen Grace and Frankie on Netflix, I highly recommend it. Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, Martin Sheen, and Sam Waterston in, well, a very weird and wild situation. The song, of course, goes way back, 1972, by Steeler's Wheel. Now, I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we stream live right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Revolution Radio is listener-supported, and they deserve your support. You can find our show archives at http://newdream.us. And you can subscribe to our shows as podcast episodes. That's available with either from the iTunes store, you know, for your Apple, or several podcast players for Android or your PC. So check it out. We're working on making it easier and easier to listen to our show. Right now, I am proud to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachuk, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. And tonight we welcome special guests Sherwood Ross, Ole Domagard, Mickey C., and Phil Ferruccio. And so tonight we are joining together for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Duluth, Minnesota, Port Orange, Florida, Coral Gables, Florida, somewhere in Spain, and wherever you are. And I want to mention again something I mentioned last week, a new book that I'm involved, a project that Chuck and I are involved in. It's called And I Suppose We Didn't Go to the Moon Either, The Beatles, The Holocaust, and Other Mass Illusions. The book demonstrates with scientific argument and empirical proof that man did not go to the moon, that Paul McCartney was replaced after his death in 1966, and that the official narrative of the Holocaust cannot be sustained. It also explains how and why the United States hung one of his doubles, not the real Saddam Hussein, and that Osama bin Laden was not killed by U.S. Navy SEALs in Pakistan in 2011, but died from his medical conditions in 2001, where it was politically expedient for him to die a second time. And I suppose we didn't go to the moon either. And you can find that at createspace.com, or easy to go to find it at amazon.com. And we continue with our mini-series regarding A Trumpet to Arms, Alternative Media in America. It's a book. The culmination of all of this is Jim Fetzer and Kevin Barrett and the False Flag Weekly News on No Lies Radio every Thursday. They are the Evolve Media. We know that today's newspapers, radio, TV are garbage, as well as the current version of what passes for alternative media, The Nation, The Progressive, NPR, Alternate, Rachel Maddow, Justin Raimondo, Seymour Hersh, David Swanson, Amy Goodman, John Stewart, if not garbage, at least suspicious, very suspicious. But what we want to do is to say something in this miniseries here about the history of the alternative press, the beginnings that have evolved into Jim Fetzer and Kevin Barrett, more from the book by David Armstrong. The final element of the underground press's editorial makeup, its bombast and sense of calculated outrage, was largely provided by another New York publication, Paul Krasner's satirical magazine, The Realist, which used ridicule to deflate political opponents. Krasner, a former comedian and freelance writer for Mad Magazine, started The Realist in 1958 and published it until 1974. The Realist's early issues contained conventional libertarian atheist stuff, but before long, Krasner was kicking over the traces, using fact and fiction, using real people as characters in his fantasies. Krasner reached his high point, or low, depending on one's point of view, in 1967 when he depicted Lyndon Johnson performing a sex act upon the corpse of John Kennedy during Air Force One's return from Dallas. The story, supposedly a passage from William Manchester's The Death of a President, was fictitious, but a number of Krasner's readers believed it. The truth, shrugged Krasner, by way of explanation, is silly putty. He intended the story as a metaphor for what Johnson allegedly did to his predecessor and was then doing to the country. For many people, the metaphor worked. The underground press borrowed ingredients from its journalistic precursors to concoct an editorial mix all its own. The satirical edge of The Realist, the personal reportage of The Village Voice, the fusion of art and radical politics of the masses, the political advocacy of Appeal to Reason, the mysticism of the spiritualist periodicals, and the primitive communism of the utopian publications were all incorporated into the underground press of the 1960s, marking a return to the diversity that characterized the radical press before World War II. From A Trumpet to Arms, Alternative Media in America, continuing next week.
The fish is not aware of the water. The American is not aware of the TV, the propaganda, the lies. Russian menace. Patrice Lumumba must die. Jacobo Arbenz must die. The fish is not aware of the water. The American is not aware of the TV, the propaganda, the lies. Mossadegh must go. El Salvador, Italian workers, peasants, Greek socialists, Nicaraguan peasants, Grenada, Philippines, Vietnam, Laos, Argentina, all threats to the American way of life, eating Doritos and watching TV in the dark with a cushy pillow. They're out there. They're dangerous. Workers, self-government, health care, roads, no police, no military. The fish is not aware of the water. The American is not aware of the TV, the propaganda, the lies. And now, an alternative viewpoint by New American Dream alternative viewpoint guy, Bubba. The Bubba family has been in the area for a long time, probably. Bubba was named after his father, Bubba, who was named after his father, Bubba. Bubba's middle name derives from his grandmother on his mother's side, Bubette, and his confirmation name, after consideration of all the saints' names, was picked from Saint Bubba of Guadalupe, who, while carrying rocks back to his home from the river for his mother's stone soup, was said to have been visited by the Blessed Virgin Mary, and stuff happened. And so without further ado, a Bubba exclusive commentary. Washington's attack on world soccer is following the script of Washington's attack on the Russian-hosted Sochi Olympics. The difference is that Washington couldn't stop the Olympics from being held in Sochi, but was limited to scaring off Westerners with lies and propaganda. In the current scandal orchestrated by Washington, Washington tends to use its takeover of FIFA to renege on FIFA's decision that Russia will host the next World Cup. This is part of Washington's agenda of isolating Russia from the world. This Washington orchestrated scandal stinks to high heaven. It seems obvious that the FIFA officials have been arrested for political reasons, that the recently overwhelmingly reelected FIFA president, Sepp Blatter, was forced to resign by Washington's threats to indict him as well. This can happen because Washington no longer is subject to the rule of law. In Washington's hands, law is a weapon that is used against everyone, every organization, every country that takes a position independent of Washington. This clears the deck for Washington and its British lapdog to take over FIFA, which henceforth will be used to reward countries that comply with Washington's foreign policy and to punish those who pursue an independent foreign policy. The only hope for South America, Asia, and Russia is to form their own World Cup and turn their backs on the corrupt West. It is astonishing that Russia, Asia, and South America so much desire to be part of the corrupt and immoral Western world. Why do countries wish to be associated with evil? Venezuela, Ecuador, Bolivia, and perhaps Argentina and Brazil have learned that being in the Western orbit means putting their country under Washington's control. Putin, Lavrov, and China's leaders say that being associated with the West is like being associated with the plague. Yet, they still want to be associated with the West. Why do Russia and China think that their self-esteem depends on Washington's approval? FIFA is a Swiss-based organization, yet the arrests of FIFA officials were based on a Washington-initiated investigation by the FBI. By asserting the universality of U.S. law, Washington is asserting the authority of its police and prosecutors over sovereign countries. Why did Switzerland and why do other countries lay down in obedience to Washington's assertion of the universality of its laws? Are the political leaders paid off, or are they threatened with assassination or false indictments? What explains that of all countries on earth, only Washington's law is universal, acknowledged, bowed down before other countries? Is it fear of retribution? Possibly. But one answer is that the entire point of being a leader of a foreign country is to be made rich by kowtowing to Washington. 1 year out of office, and Tony Blair was reported to be worth $50 million. Where'd the money come from? No one wanted to listen to Blair's speeches when he was prime minister. But why did Americans pay him six-figure sums to give speeches? Putin can become rich, too. All he needs to do is turn Russia over to Washington. Here we are in an orchestrated soccer scandal hyped to the hilt by the prostitute media, while all the real scandals go unremarked. For example, a number of the mega banks in the West have pleaded guilty to felony charges and only suffered fines. As Finian Cunningham has pointed out, the money laundering and price rigging by the banks too big to jail dwarfs the alleged criminality at FIFA. Washington itself cannot be believed, as not a single significant statement out of Washington's mouth since the Clinton regime has been true. Yet Washington still parades around as the arbiter of truth. Saddam Hussein did not have weapons of mass destruction. Assad did not use chemical weapons. Iran did not have a nuclear weapons program. Russia did not invade Ukraine. But Washington convinced the world its lies were true. This has been a Bubba 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 exclusive commentary. Sponsored by Double Bubba Bubblegum. Yellow, blue, white, black, pink, orange, green, red. It's good.
Our first guest of the evening is Ole Domegaard. Ole Domegaard comes to us each month from Spain. And Chuck, do you have a little introduction to your piece for Ole?
Well, I wasn't able to speak with Ole this week, so there was a recent interview on Red Ice Radio with Jim Fetzer and Ole Domagar, and I'm presenting a segment near the beginning of that interview, including the introduction by the Red Ice Radio host. That's Red Ice Radio, if you want to go and listen to the whole thing after our show. Here we go.
Mr. Fetzer is a former Marine Corps officer and McKnight Professor Emeritus at the University of Minnesota, Duluth. He has published widely on the theoretical foundations of scientific knowledge, computer science, artificial intelligence, cognitive science, and evolution and mentality. Well, I think you guys and gals know Ole Domagar by now if you are regular listeners, but for any newcomers, let me just mention that Ole is an author, international speaker, investigator, former journalist and artist who has spent at least 25 years investigating a multitude of conspiracies. He's behind the website Light on Conspiracies. And we are going to stay in the topic of conspiracy and cover-up today. We have an interesting program ahead on a new book of theirs called And I Suppose We Didn't Go to the Moon Either. It's a collection of essays that is intended to challenge some of our most cherished and deeply held beliefs. Let me just read a portion here to you before we get to our guests. This book demonstrates with scientific argument and empirical proof that man did not go to the moon, that Paul McCartney was replaced after his death in 1966, and that the official narrative of the Holocaust cannot be sustained. It also explains how and why the United States hung one of its doubles, not the real Saddam Hussein, and that Osama bin Laden was not killed by U.S. Navy SEALs in Pakistan in 2011, but died from his medical conditions in 2001, where it was politically expedient for him to die a second time. Welcome, gentlemen. It's great to have you both here. And obviously, Ole, you're a returning guest. We've had you many times now. As always, though, it's always great to have you with us. Welcome back.
Thank you so much, Henrik.
And, of course, we have with us Jim Fetzer as well. First time we have you on the program. It's good to have you here. Thank you for coming on.
Well, I've heard so many good things about Red Ice Radio, Henrik. I'm delighted to be here.
Thank you so much. Great to hear it. I mean, you've been, of course, doing what you've been doing for a long time. It's good to finally have you here, connect with you, and I'm looking forward to speaking more about your work as well, Jim, here. But as a way of kind of beginning this program here, why don't we just kind of start with you, Jim, before we dive into the book. I want to hear a little bit more about you. I know that you're a former Marine Corps officer. You were a professor at the University of Minnesota, Duluth. How did you end up writing on the subjects we'll speak more about here today?
Yes, I graduated from Princeton magna cum laude in philosophy and was commissioned a second lieutenant in the Marine Corps. I resigned my commission after 4 years as a captain to enter graduate school and earn my PhD in the history and the philosophy of science. And from 1970 to 2006, I taught at a wide range of colleges and universities around the country, principally courses in logic, critical thinking, and scientific reasoning. I became very interested in JFK in 1992. When I discovered that the editor-in-chief of the Journal of the American Medical Association was attacking everyone who'd ever done serious work on the assassination, many very prominent figures, and I knew that he was thereby abusing his position as an editor, where I had a great deal of editorial experience myself. I was 10 years an associate editor with Synthes, a very famous international journal for epistemology, methodology, and the philosophy of science. I would subsequently found my own journal, an international journal for artificial intelligence, philosophy, and cognitive science entitled Minds and Machines. So it was very clear to me that this was an abuse, and it struck me that if someone of his degree of prominence were to be politically abusing his position, perhaps some of us with special backgrounds and abilities ought to become involved in research here. I contacted a fellow who'd authored a letter to the American Medical Association, to the journal known colloquially as JAMA, J-A-M-A, where I liked what he had to say. He had both a PhD and an MD. It turned out in physics, MD, and he was board certified in radiation oncology, which, of course, is a treatment of cancer using X-ray therapy. His name is David W. Mantic. And I suggested to him that we collaborate on a long article or a short book. Several others joined us, including a world authority on the human brain, who is also an expert on wound ballistics, a PhD in physics from Australia, who is an expert in electromagnetism, the properties of light and images of moving objects, a physician who'd been present in trauma room one when JFK was brought in, and then 2 days later was responsible for the treatment of his alleged assassin, Lee Oswald, the legendary photo and film analyst. We redid the case from the bottom up, went back to the official x-rays and the autopsy report and so forth, and discovered the x-rays had been altered, the autopsy report had been revised, that they'd even substituted someone else's brain, because once they patched up a fist-sized hole in the back of JFK's head, there was nowhere for those brains to go. I could have drawn that conclusion because it's a virtually intact brain when JFK had about half his brains blown out in Dealey Plaza, but it was nice to come from a world authority on the human brain. I would wind up chairing or co-chairing 5 different national conferences on JFK, published my first book, a collection of expert studies, including by Mantic and others, including Bob Livingston, who was the world authority on the human brain, who was the scientific director of 2 institutes of the National Institute for Health, which are located across the street from Bethesda Naval Hospital. Really fascinating stuff. It's entitled Assassination Science 1998. I organized a conference in Minneapolis in 1999 on the death of JFK, published a second book entitled Murder in Dealey Plaza in 2000, and then had a conference on the Duluth campus about the Zapruder film specifically because we had so many indications the film had been massively revised, and that was published in the Great Zapruder Film Hoax in 2003.
Yeah.
I founded Scholars for 9/11 Truth in December of 2005, Henrik, and I don't know if the university would have been supportive in my research on 9/11 as it was on JFK, where I believe I had an advantage because there was a member of the graduate faculty, the administration, and the Twin Cities campus who really liked my work. So, you know, while many colleges and universities take a dim view of their faculty becoming involved in these complex and controversial issues, my opinion is nothing could be more appropriate.
Yeah.
And I think it was a rather natural extension of my research from that point on, especially on 9/11, but subsequently on Sandy Hook, on the Boston bombing, currently on Jade Helm. And where this book was kind of a natural extension, because so much of what we're dealing with here involves lies from the government, and some of the biggest lies we've heard from the government are ones that are addressed in this particular volume.
Well, exactly. The title is, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon either. So obviously it's a collection of essays with a lot of different authors. You guys are editors, have been doing the layout, et cetera, and there's a lot of different topics in there. I don't know if it would be fair to kind of call it a one-stop shop of all the things we're not supposed to know about, but how did the book come together, guys? Whoever want to pick up on that?
Well, here's a nice summary from the back page that gives the theme of the book and some of the tenor. William Casey, director of the CIA, was reported to have told his staff, "Our disinformation campaign will be a success when everything the American people believe is false." And they seem to have done a pretty good job of it, where this book explains how we know that we did not go to the moon but faked it, that Paul McCartney died and was replaced, that we hung a double, not Saddam, that Osama died in Afghanistan, not Pakistan, that the Holocaust was different than historians claim, where this book challenges some of our most cherished and deeply held beliefs, but the authors have no axe to grind, and unlike the parties to these frauds, are only committed to exposing the truth.
Yeah.
To be more specific with you, Ole, Mike Palachek envisioned the having a series of books entitled Resist the Empire, Save the World, the first of which was actually a study of me and of Kevin Barrett, a colleague with whom I had a radio show on the Genesis Communication Network for a year and a half entitled The Dynamic Duo. So he used the title The Dynamic Duo, and it turned out to be a monster book about the size of a small phone directory. But we wanted to do one also on Sandy Hook and the Boston bombing, both of which were elaborate frauds. Nobody died at Sandy Hook or at the Boston bombing. I've done a huge amount of research on this. That was actually originally intended to be published before this one, which leads to the title, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon either after learning that nobody died at Sandy Hook. But because of production problems on that book, this one has come out first and actually been beneficial because it enables me to re-edit the earlier book with much more recent and actually more important articles than many we had in the earlier version. And there will be a sequel here about the nuclear attack on New York on 9/11, because most Americans have no idea how it was done, who was responsible, or why. So the final volume in the four-book series will be on 9/11.
Very good. There's a lot of different topics here, obviously, to dive into and to talk more about. And obviously, the most controversial has to be the Holocaust issue, and I definitely want to talk more in detail about that a little bit later. But let's just kind of speak about the main subject first of the book, or I don't know if it is the main subject, but it's the first one, and it addressed in the title of the moon, of course. Just tell us when and how you first, Jim, and then we can switch over to Ulla. Why this is a topic that deserves the title of the book, in your opinion, Jim?
Well, it's very interesting because in 2001, I had made my second trip to London and brought my wife. I'd been there before to give the keynote address at the annual meeting of the British Society for the Philosophy of Science at the London School of Economics. And I loved London so much, I knew Jan and Sarah would be thrilled. So next time I brought them with me, and Jan and I, her maiden name was Morgan. So when I was looking for a suitable place, I found on Bloomsbury Street the Morgan Hotel, which backs onto the British Museum. So I booked us there, and we were watching one of the BBC channels when, to my astonishment, they played conspiracy theory, did we land on the moon? And I was utterly captivated. I'd say from that point on, I took a keen interest. And on my own radio show, which was more recently on Revere Radio with 882-hour interviews on complex and controversial issues, I did several about the moon landings, including with Jay Wiedner, who, of course, is a contributor to the present book. And, you know, it was just a matter of putting all the pieces together, where Winston Wu turns out to be an absolute genius in his analysis of the moon landing, and one of the key chapters there is by Winston entitled The Apollo Moon Hoax, 35 Proofs We Did Not Go. I would just add, Heinrich, that we have 100 pages on the moon landing. We have 100 pages on Paul McCartney and the importance of...
Thanks to Red Ice Radio. You can see that at redicecreations.com and listen to the rest of the interview there.
Coming this fall on CBS, Survivor, Nebraska. You will survive uncomfortable family holidays, uber-patriotic tractor parades, teachers who teach fake American history, Survivor, Nebraska. You will be dropped in the middle of town between the cannon and the church and the elevator and the bank and Arby's, and be expected to learn to survive by speaking the native tongue, never using words with more than two syllables. Welcome. Do what we say, and you can live out your days in Nebraska. It's a nice place. We like it here. We've never been anywhere else. Neither will you. If you do not learn to follow the rules of Survivor Nebraska, you will live to regret it. You can say whatever you like, but if you say something we don't like, you will forever be a stranger among us. The tribe has spoken. Funding for tonight's program is provided by GoBarbaraBush.com, as well as the United States Navy, a global force for good, the United States Army, be all you can be, United States Air Force, peace is our profession, and the United States Marines, the few, the proud, the brave, because we can never sell you the truth. This portion of our program is being provided to you by the good folks at The Next Big Thing. New apps for your phone, more stuff for you to do while you are doing that boring driving thing. Well, folks, hold on to your hats because this new app is going to rock your world. It's the application that allows you to understand that UFOs, Bigfoot, and conspiracies are real. Download it today. Well, maybe tomorrow. We're working on it. The next season of Finding Bigfoot starts in November. Find it on the Animal Planet Network or by sitting in the McDonald's parking lot and using their internet service. We're getting dangerously close to the time when everyone will know that Bigfoot exists. We're not sure if you're ready for that yet. And that's why we're working overtime on new apps for you. We kind of like being the ones, one of the ones in the know, knowing about something so magical that others yet don't realize. But soon that will not be possible.
Richard Dolan quote, "The moment of disclosure of UFOs is not the end of anything. It's the beginning of the real fight for truth. We saw demonstrations of a million people in Tahrir Square. Don't you think there might be a march of a million people on Area 51, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, Los Alamos? Maybe. I bet you Wackenhut security can stop a march of 100 people, but not a million. Not a million. Don't you think that just might happen? What about opening up a new truth movement? Because after UFOs, then 9/11, JFK, underground bases, you name it, chemtrails, it's all going to be on the table. By God, what an exciting, challenging mess it's going to be. And so, in other words, the moment of disclosure is not going to be the end of anything. It's the beginning of the real fight for truth, not the end."
The folks at the Next Big Thing ask you to be careful what you hope for, huh? What happens the day Barack Obama and George W. Bush and his father are walked out of the golf course in handcuffs, charged with prior knowledge and hiding information about a felony, the attacks of 9/11, and a thoughtful U.S. Marshal puts his hand on George Sr.'s head so he does not bump it on the door and we get the final public sneer of that career criminal? And it appears on the front page of the New York Post and Time Magazine and Rolling Stone. What happens when the talk about UFOs and Bigfoot and the Wellstone murder are about details and where and when and how rather than a rolling of the eyes? What happens when we have actual names and court cases and confessions and Newsweek and the Wall Street Journal and New York Times front page stories about the trial of some still living principals in the JFK, RFK, and Martin Luther King Jr. murders? Our whole world will be rocked. And somebody will need to make an app for that in a darn big hurry. But thanks to the folks at the Next Big Thing, it's already in the works, guys. Things will be different.
Our whole perception of life and what we should be doing in life will be changed forever. It might be scary, but that's where we need to go. Down the rabbit hole, folks. Step right up. Don't be shy. Okay, now careful. One at a time. No pushing. Everyone will get their turn. Easy now. Careful. There you go. We're the Next Big Thing. And we bring the world to your vehicle, your doorstep, and right on up to your mind.
And now we bring you the new American Dream masterpiece, classic Playhouse Theater, something, something. Real voices with a message that you will not hear on the CBS Nightly News.
Mike Prisner, Iraq war veteran. The real enemies are not in some distant land. They're not people whose names we don't know and cultures we don't understand. The enemy is people we know very well and can identify. The enemy is a system that wages war when it is profitable. The enemy is the CEOs who lay us off from our jobs when it is profitable. The insurance companies who deny us health care when it is profitable. It's the banks who take away our homes when it is profitable. Our enemy is not 5,000 miles away. They are right here at home. And if we organize with our sisters and brothers, we can stop this war, we can stop this government, and we can create a better world.
And now we hear the voice of Philip F. Nelson, author of LBJ, the Mastermind of JFK's Assassination.
The man should be known for what he was, a world-class criminal. A thorough cleansing of the national conscience is in order, after all of these years, to enable Americans to reconcile the personal tragedy suffered by John F. Kennedy and the national tragedy suffered by the country at large at the hands of Lyndon B. Johnson. and tell the real story of the 36th president is exposed and the complete truth of his crimes against the United States and the world are acknowledged, there will always be questions lurking about the trustworthiness of the government itself.
And finally, the voice of William Pepper, attorney for Sirhan Sirhan, now attempting to be released from prison for the 1968 murder of Robert Kennedy on grounds that Sirhan was programmed to be a patsy and a decoy for the real killers in the Ambassador Hotel pantry that hot summer night.
The American people have been called by numbers of people all over the world as being the most dumbed-down population in Western civilization. Certainly, they are probably among the least politically and other ways sophisticated people in Western culture. That's no accident, and it's no testimony to the lack of intelligence and potential of the citizens of this republic. It's a testimony to the control of thinking and the flow of information that people are allowed to have. The effects of the media and the thought control that has been developed in this country is extraordinary, and it's very difficult to overcome. One wonders how long it's going to take for the uprising to occur. I actually think we may be reaching a point where we're entering a pre-revolutionary stage. Hello. And a pleasant morning or evening to you all. Hello. I'm Mitch McGillicuddy, and it's time for Interview with a Terrorist, your Sunday morning talk show live from Washington, D.C. The Patriot Act, TSC, Homeland Security, the FBI, the CIA, lots of other stuff. How many millions of dollars go toward all that? Paid for by moms working 9 jobs every day, getting up to take their kids to daycare at 4:30 every morning. Today, we'll visit with a few of the folks who've made this all possible. The gradual, then lightning quick transition from America to Freedom Fries City. Tonight or this morning, depending on the time zone and curvature of the earth and daylight savings time, on Interview with a Terrorist, we are joined in our studio by some people shrouded in mystery, rarely seen. Our guests are seated across from me at this moment in the shadows with the curtains closed. I cannot see their faces, though I know they're there because I can see the rest of their bodies. Our guests, we'll simply call them Mr. Terrorist for the purposes of our conversation this evening. They've agreed to the interview just so long as we disguise their voices. But before we begin, let me tell you, you'll be able to hear the voices of our Mr. Terrorist just fine, as if they're seated in your living room, even though the thought of that might send shivers down your spine. Oh, in fact, our garbling machine, well, it's broken, or we can't find it. Actually, we doubt that such a thing exists, maybe in some Harry Potter alternative universe. So we've asked our terrorists to garble their words as they speak, and then, thanks to the 7-second delay, which does exist, our technicians will be able to run those words through the washer, and you'll hear the real voice of our in-studio terrorists. It's all very complicated. Beyond your imagination. Just trust us. You will not be able to know who they all are and all that, so let's proceed, shall we? Call it willing suspension of disbelief, if that helps. Call it blue broccoli, if that helps as well. Good evening, honored terrorists. This morning's guests, Barack Obama, George Bush, Bill Clinton, Janet Reno, Karl Rove, Dick Cheney, and Colin Powell. What we would like to know is who you really are, how you got to this position, who tells you what to do, why you do it, and why have you not either killed yourself by now or at least confessed, told the rest of us what is really happening behind the curtains of our world? Who wants to go first? Barack Obama, George Bush, Bill Clinton, Janet Reno, Karl Rove, Dick Cheney, Colin Powell? Oh, fun fact, FYI to our audience, Condoleezza Rice has just slipped into the shadows, into a chair next to another of our other special terrorists. Come on, we know none of you are shy. Criminally insane, perhaps, but never shy. Come on. Black Mamba, did you bury your courage at sea again? Tricky Dick, is that your shotgun, or are you just glad to be here? Hey, you're doing a great job there, Bushy. How's your golf game? Travel much? I heard there's a warrant out in about 12 countries if you ever fly the friendly skies, my friend. How about you? You in the I Spoke at the UN t-shirt. Janet, have you been lifting weights again? You look marvelous. And Condoleezza, you must be on break from that sweet teaching gig at Stanford. They must let anyone in there, right? Of course I'm kidding. Not. Bill Clinton, there you are. You have such a tan, even in the dark. Flying too close to the sun again, Icarus? And those long reptile fingers. You look just like E.T. You glow, radiate in the dark, Bill. Did you know that? Come on, guys. 9/11, Oklahoma City, Waco, burying Osama bin Laden at sea, weapons of mass destruction. You know the drill. Come on, guys. This is not Nuremberg, The Hague. Well, not yet. Just a little old nationally televised Sunday morning TV political talk show. How about just between you and me? Just pretend we're sitting alone at your kitchen table drinking some good old American-made coffee. How about El Salvador, Chile, Allende, Libya? Libya, anyone? Guatemala? Well, folks, this is Mitch McGillicuddy, and you've been watching Interview with a Terrorist, sponsored by Marlboro. We'll stay here all night till one of our terrorists decides to talk. We'll cut back whenever there's news right into the middle of nice kitchen, big hamburger, and bigger bathroom, if we need to. Good day, good night, good morning, and goodbye.
Our next guest of the evening is Sherwood Ross. Sherwood Ross speaks with us each month from Coral Gables, Florida. Sherwood is a legendary journalist. He is a poet, a playwright. What else? You can see his stuff at Veterans Today. He's a columnist there. He started his work with the Chicago News Service. Just a lot of stuff that Sherwood has done. We're very lucky to be able to speak with him, to listen to him each month. And Chuck will be getting Sherwood on the phone right about now. Sherwood.
Well, hello, Sherwood. It's Chuck and Mike and the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Well, okay. I thought I'd take a look at that report by Seymour Hersh, who charged in the London Review of Books in a 10,000-word article. I mean, it was said that the White House narrative about the killing of al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden in 2011 was largely false. Hersh wrote that when bin Laden was slain by U.S. Navy SEALs, he in fact wasn't a free man surrounded by his guards, but he had been a prisoner since 2006, a prisoner in Pakistan of the Inter-Services Intelligence Agency, which is sort of like the American CIA. In Pakistan, it's called the ISI. And moreover, Hersh said, top Pakistani military officials knew of the raid in advance and were complicit in what was really bin Laden's execution. They removed their guards from his compound and they ensured that U.S. helicopters could get in. Well, President Obama said that bin Laden and two of his men were killed in what he called a firefight, as well as bin Laden's wife, who was used as a human shield. And the president said no Americans were harmed. Well, let's stop right there. Isn't it rather strange in a firefight when all the dead and wounded are on one side? Moreover, the idea that bin Laden was killed when he resisted the SEALs suggests that his Pakistani guards allowed their prisoner and his aides to have weapons. How much sense does that make, that prison guards would allow the prisoner to have weapons? And if, as the White House claims, Obama was not an ISI captive, why was his compound smack in the heart of a Pakistan military and intelligence community center in Abbottabad? Another lie exposed. The White House said that the death of bin Laden was the culmination of years of careful and highly advanced intelligent work. What was the facts? Hearst says that the U.S. learned of his whereabouts from a walk-in informer. The man is an ex-Pakistani intelligence officer who betrayed the secret in return for much of the $25 million reward money offered by the U.S. Then there's the matter of Obama's alleged burial at sea. Although Rear Admiral Charles Goetz said the funeral service followed traditional procedures for Islamic burial, Hearst says there was no indication of who washed and wrapped the body or of which Arabic speaker conducted the service. What's more, the Navy refused to make the aircraft carrier's log of daily events available to reporters. And Skipper Bruce Lindsay of the carrier told reporters he was unable to discuss the burial. What's more, Rear Admiral Samuel Perez, commander of the whole carrier group strike force, told reporters the crew had been ordered not to talk about the burial. Well, all that sounds a bit fishy, especially since Hearst said his sources said that the funeral aboard the aircraft carrier Carl Vinson never took place. Over and again, we find the administration ordering its officials not to talk about the raid. And this is a regime that President Obama said was going to be transparent. Instead, Hearst finds that every member of the SEALs hit team and were presented with a non-disclosure form drafted by the White House's legal office. It promised civil penalties and a lawsuit for anyone who blabbed about the mission. So within days of the raid, the Pentagon had to issue a series of clarifying statements. No, bin Laden was not armed when he was shot and killed. No, bin Laden did not use one of his wives as a shield. So all this goes to show that bin Laden had no weapons and that had strength to the argument he was an ISI prisoner, not a free man. While Obama has built a reputation for lying and breaking his promises, reporter Hirsch, on the other hand, has a reputation for honesty and reportorial excellence. He won a Pulitzer Prize for breaking the My Lai massacre story. He's also won two national magazine awards. He's won five coveted Polk awards. He won Britain's prestigious George Orwell Award for political writing. So whose word are you going to take? We also need to consider how much Obama had to gain if he could show voters he could get Bin Laden in his 2012 reelection bid. The Obama campaign milked the Bin Laden slaying for all it was worth. So if the Hirsch account is accurate and Bin Laden was unarmed, it begs the larger question of why did the Pentagon order an elite unit of SEALs to assault the compound with guns blazing when the man could have been taken prisoner? Isn't there a question or two the American people might have liked to put to Bin Laden, say about 9/11, for instance? In retrospect, the Obama White House achieved a victory. It achieved its goals. President Obama improved his reelection chances. Of course, he did it by killing Bin Laden rather than bringing him to justice. And he stamped out the truth to do it. In the process, he fixed things so the SEALs can't talk, the admirals can't talk, the sailors can't talk, and above all, Osama bin Laden can't talk. Good night to every one of you.
Thank you, Sherwood. That was a very an excellent summary, and we really appreciate having you each month on the show.
My pleasure, Chuck. Keep up the great work you all are doing.
We thank you. Coming up next, Phil Ferrugio with It's the Empire, Stupid, and Mickey Z. We're presenting some recorded segments with Mickey Z. Stay tuned.
Port Orange, Florida, with stops at Information Clearinghouse, Dandelion Salad, Nation of Change, World News Trust, and many others, here is Phil Ferrugio with It's the Empire, Stupid.
All right, Working Stiffs, remember the words of Nancy Reagan when she said, just say no. Well, how about just say no to military-industrial empire? It's through its embedded and controlled mainstream media. This is why so many of us go to the Internet to get our news, even though a portion of it is not vetted and sometimes questionable. What choice do we have? Mainstream is so full of crap. Here's an example of hypocrisy in reporting by our empire's corporate-run news. On Thursday, May 21st, USA Money section ran a puff piece entitled, New PayPal CEO Gets His Hands Dirty. The story went on, while running Virgin Mobile, in 57, hit the streets of New York without a penny to his name to better understand the plight of homeless teens the company was trying to help. I kid you not. Anyway, one wonders if Schulman, who the Wall Street Journal reported earned over $40 million from the split of PayPal from eBay, ever gave a size on money to some of the homeless teens in their Fincross. After all, Schulman on whole day made paper like USA Today to law joke. To add insult to injury, the article goes on to report that Schulman, as head of American Express, how much did he learn while there one once? He spent a day trying to cash checks without the benefit of his true financial background. I kid you not. This is what they had to go. A mega millionaire who slums it for 24 hours or even less. I will bet that so-called rich liberals like Schulman will be standing 16, just as the phony so-called conservatives like the Koch brothers and their right-wing compatriots will do the same for the Republicans 2000. Either way, the corporate fat cats win and we serfs lose. You know, dollar scientist and parliamentarian former Francis Bacon, on this empire. He wrote a part of wars. Now, said a current American empire that, well, fat cats always have buffers to keep the wolf from their door until, of course, the buffers run out or run away. Now, here is a $64 trillion question. How much longer can our infrastructure, schools, and social services, first providers, see major cuts or no phony wars? Add that to the fact that half of our federal taxes goes for military spending. Over half. Does anyone care anymore that to keep one soldier in Afghanistan, illegally and immorally, by the way, at a cost of approximately $1.2 million a year per soldier? We could use that money to subsidize or hire 25 school teachers, or policemen or firemen at $50,000 salaries for 1 year each. Imagine that instead of ordering another, not needed, by the way, Boeing Apache helicopter at the cost of, are you ready for this? 52, we could fix the teeth of hundreds of dental coverage. I mean, how many drones with how many missiles are caught taxpayers each time we continued in this so-called war on ISIS?
Let the nations of the Middle East join together and defeat ISIS without our interference. After all, well, we all know why groups like ISIS even got born. If it wasn't for our empire's foreign policy decisions by both Republican, the worst, and Democrat, the lesser worst, administration, are things hopeless? My buddy and street corner compatriot Jim R. says yes. I waver back and forth on that question. I will say this, though. If the overwhelming majority of working stiffs out there do not wake up and see the light concerning our military-industrial empire and demand a pullback of it, thanks to Phil Ferrugio, I had to fill in the last couple of paragraphs for him because of some technical difficulties. We'll see him again next week.
I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. Hello, everyone. Now for your local Earth news. This is Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachek with a review of today's news from the eye of the hurricane and the eye of the blizzard. From the Nuclear Resistor, the Nuclear Resistor Networks, the anti-nuclear and anti-war resistance movement, while acting as a clearinghouse for information about contemporary nonviolent resistance to war and the nuclear threat. Our emphasis is on support for the women and men jailed for these actions. From the Nuclear Resistor, Rice Borchi Wally released. The Catholic nun and two military veterans and Catholic workers spent 2 years in prison for their 2012 Transform Now Plowshares direct disarmament action at the Y-12 nuclear weapons complex in Tennessee. Sister Megan Rice was due out in November 2015. Greg Borchi Obed and Michael Wally were due out in fall 2017. But their lawyers appealed their sabotage conviction, and it was overturned. Today, May 16th, all three were released from prison. Their message and the work continues, disarm nuclear weapons.
Five nuclear abolition activists arrested at Mother's Day action at Kitsap Banger Trident subbase. Activists make statement at nuke base. Our children deserve better. Activists briefly blockaded the entrance to a West Coast nuclear weapons base in a statement against U.S. nuclear modernization efforts on the eve of Mother's Day. On Saturday, April 9th, anti-nuclear weapons activists gathered at the main entrance to Naval Base Kitsap Banger, Silverdale, Washington, home to eight of the nation's 14 Ohio-class Trident ballistic missile submarines, carrying signs saying, "Our children deserve better." Five protesters walked into the roadway and blocked traffic entering the base. Washington State Patrol officers moved in and escorted the protesters off the roadway.
From Citizens for Legitimate Government, the Pentagon has learned that additional samples of live anthrax were sent to three laboratories in Canada. Two defense officials confirmed Monday evening. That means that specimens of the deadly Bacillus anthracis have been sent to labs in 12 states, the District of Columbia, and three countries. The samples came from the U.S. Army lab at Dugway Proving Ground in Utah. The number of laboratories known to have mistakenly received samples of live anthrax has grown to at least 28 labs in 12 states in the District of Columbia, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said Monday.
FBI, ISIS poses near-term threat to U.S. military bases. Personnel warned of insider attacks, a.k.a. false flags. The FBI, the National Counterterrorism Center, and Department of Homeland Security have issued a new bulletin warning of increased near-term threats against U.S. military bases and events. The bulletin advised law enforcement and military personnel to remain vigilant, especially during upcoming national holidays and military events, due to the heightened threat of attacks by the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, the ultra-radical group that's been targeted by U.S. forces after they were created and funded by U.S. forces. The bulletin said there was no credible threat involving specific events, but said the agencies had become aware via social media of suggestions U.S. military bases, locations, and events could be targeted in the near term.
Fatal police shootings in 2015 approaching 400 nationwide. In an alley in Denver, police gunned down a 17-year-old girl joyriding in a stolen car. In a high-rise apartment in Birmingham, Alabama, police shot an elderly man after his son asked them to make sure he was okay. Douglas Harris, 77, answered the door with a gun. The two are among at least 385 people shot and killed by police nationwide during the first 5 months of this year, more than two a day, according to a Washington Post analysis. That is more than twice the rate of fatal police shootings tallied by the federal government over the past decade, a count that officials concede is incomplete.
Former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley launched his long-shot White House bid Saturday with populist attacks on corporate giants, big banks, and political dynasties, offering himself as a younger, more progressive alternative to Hillary Rodham Clinton. "We cannot rebuild the American dream here at home by catering to the voices of the privileged and the powerful," O'Malley told a sweaty crowd at Baltimore's Federal Hill Park. "Before coming here, to campaign in the nation's first presidential nominating state. O'Malley will visit New Hampshire, another early nominating state, on Sunday. Creating a base of support there and in Iowa is crucial to his upstart strategy."
So that's all, folks. That's the news, and we are out of here. Good night and good luck. And so it goes. That's the way it is. Stay on the same page. Take it to the next level. It is what it is. At the end of the day, have a good day. And always remember to tip your congressman. Our next guest of the evening is Mickey Z. Mickey Z comes to us each month from Astoria, Queens, New York City. Mickey Z is a poet, a writer, an activist, and Chuck has something for Mickey Z lined up.
Well, it's the beginning of another month, and once again, it's time for Mickey Z, our monthly columnist from Astoria, New York. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get an interview with Mickey this week, so I'm going to present a couple of other pre-recorded items. This one's from Veggie Pride 2014.
Gentlemen, now I'll go out of speechifying mode and into MC mode. So you caught a brief glimpse of his handsome face just a few minutes ago. He is a paladin in the animal rights movement here in New York City, and I dare say here in the United States. He's a man you see all over the place. If there's something involving animal rights or human rights going on, you are more likely than not to see his smiling face and dimples right there in the thick of it. He is a burr in the saddle, ladies and gentlemen, of the 1%, and anyone who thinks that they have the right to exploit and oppress anyone at all. He is the author of 11 books at the last count. 12 books, rather, sorry. I think he just published a new one between the time that we spoke and now. Very prolific writer and activist and a fellow that I am honored to call a friend. Ladies and gentlemen, how about a big vegan welcome to the one and only Mr. Mickey Z!
Hello again. Let me begin, as always, by saying peace and power to all species. My name is Mickey Z, and I'm here to recruit you. But first, I want to say a big thank you to Pamela Rice for all the work she does every year to make this happen. How about a round of applause for Pamela Rice? And I'm grateful for the opportunity each year to be here in the historic Union Square Park, where over 100 years ago, standing right here, was a woman by the name of Emma Goldman. Can I get a raised fist for Emma Goldman? All right. Now, we are here united in the name of collective liberation. We are united in the name of holistic justice. And since I've been right here last year, we've had some progress. I know that the animal rights movement here in New York City has grown. The number of vegans nationwide has grown. A movie like Blackfish has brought the topic of animal captivity into mainstream living rooms. And we've made progress elsewhere, including on the carriage horse industry. And I dare say that next year when I'm standing here, there will be no carriage horse industry in New York City. But we gotta stay on them. We need you out in the streets. Unfortunately, there's a lot still going on. Because since last year at this time, roughly 1 trillion of our fellow earthlings have been killed for food. The oceans are still being overfished, the forests clear cut. The pace continues. The industry that is killing this food, the meat and dairy-based industry, consumes and destroys 1/3 of the planet's land surface and is the number one source of human-created greenhouse gases, which translates into climate change. So obviously, we have a lot more to do. And I'm glad to see you guys came out here despite the rain, because we can't afford to take a day off. We need to have commitment. The type of commitment demonstrated by the great Bob Marley back in the 70s when there was a politically motivated assassination attempt on his life. And 2 days later, he was up on stage, injured in an open-air concert, and was asked, "How could you be out here, risking it again?" And he said, "The people trying to make the world a worse place never take a day off, so how can I?" So thank you for not taking a day off, even though there's rain. Hey. For those of you who have yet to embrace the vegan and animal liberation lifestyle, let me make this crystal clear. There are approximately 8.7 million known animal species on the planet. If your idea of equality only includes one of those species, it ain't equality. If your idea of justice only includes one of those species, it ain't justice. And if your idea of liberation only includes one of those species, it sure as fuck ain't liberation. And this isn't a matter of choosing animals over humans or humans over animals. That is the classic left-wing excuse. I like animals, but I'm too busy helping humans. And we know it's a bullshit excuse. Because when someone accuses me of liking animals more than humans, it sounds to me like I'm being accused of liking my circulatory system more than my respiratory system. These are intricately interwoven systems. You don't have to choose one. We are aiming for collective liberation. However, the non-humans on the planet cannot play a role in changing anything. They have no say in how we humans behave and how we humans create our culture, yet they pay the highest price of all. So therefore, it becomes our obligation to look out for them a little bit more, because they can't change society, only we can change society. Now, you guys with me? As I said, what it comes down to is reconnecting with the natural world. It's not enough to rise above the latest man-made conflict and declare oneself a humanist. We must dig deeper and identify as earthlings and stand in solidarity with all of our fellow earthlings. That is the most fundamental identification as an earthling. Now, as I said earlier, we cannot afford to take a day off. And I'm glad to see you folks out here today. And I hope that none of you will leave this park today without making at least one new connection. Let this event resonate far beyond this park today. And also, don't leave this park without making a new commitment to creating change this year. Let's have more change by the time we're standing here next year. The type of commitment I mentioned earlier with Bob Marley. Because ask yourself, are there any days off at the fur farm? Are there any days off at SeaWorld? Are there any days off at the vivisection lab? Are there any days off at the puppy mill? And are there any days off at the slaughterhouse? And of course, the answer is no. So that means, collectively speaking, there are no days off for us until every cage is empty. So So I want you to embrace solidarity. I want you to cross over into other forms of activism and challenge all forms of oppression, all forms of privilege, all forms of hierarchy. We must unite our battle against speciesism with the battle against all other forms of hierarchy. And to those who are fighting only involved in human hierarchy, let me remind you, if you don't embrace the struggle for speciesism, you will get equality. It'll be the equality of extinction. So let's work together, create solidarity, and embrace diversity of tactics. Because as often as possible, we want to give them this, right? As often as possible. But sometimes, you got to give them this. Say peace and power to all species. Thank you for being here.
Well, that was Mickey Z at Veggie Pride 2014. And now we're going to present something a little more recent. Here is Mickey Z on activism, rethinking activism.
Hey, everyone. Mickey Z here. And it's been a while since I made a video. And it's been a long while since I've consistently put videos like this up. And it's part of the reason is because I'm sort of reevaluating how to best use my voice and my platform and my skills in the name of social justice. I've always enjoyed what I do, writing articles, books, giving talks, making videos like this, using social media, blogs, etc., to try and encourage people to rediscover the subversive pleasure of thinking for themselves. But what I find more and more as I begin to evolve as an activist is that in many cases, unknowingly, but regardless, in many cases, I have been perhaps speaking about issues or taking platforms that maybe is not the best place for me. So when I write on a regular basis how crucial it is for activists to continue to evolve and grow and broaden coalitions and create solidarity and intersectionality, this isn't just me looking for praise. This is really what I think. So right now, I am putting those principles into action by, again, reevaluating how I can bring my gifts to the struggle without usurping someone else's position or speaking over someone or mansplaining or whitesplaining or doing anything counterproductive. My goal is to be an effective activist, but my bigger goal is to be a very productive and reliable and trustworthy ally. So this video is going to be the last one for a little while, unless something changes. But if you guys have any idea, any input, anything you want to share related to this type of topic, please leave information in the comments below or comment on Facebook, my blog, or email me, and just let me know what you think. And I would love your input because that's how we learn and grow.
Well, we look forward to having a full interview with Mickey Z for our show next month, as we usually do. But we certainly appreciate the opportunity to bring you these recordings. You can find those on YouTube. Mickey has his channel on YouTube. Just search for Mickey Z and you'll see a number of different things. Coming up next segment, Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow. Our daily civics lesson: do we believe what we believe because we have studied, held them in our hands, rolled them around, and decided? Also, the New American Dream, masterpiece, classic, playhouse, theater, something, something, featuring Bill Hicks. And, of course, the news. That's the news from Newtown, my hometown.
Don't stop thinking about tomorrow. Remember the night of the Clinton inaugural balls? The singing, the dancing, the smiling, the dreams, the hopes. Remember how they gave up on health care? Remember the omnibus crime bill, the construction of dozens of new prisons. Remember the bombing of Yugoslavia for 70 days? Remember the Welfare Reform Act, the end of ADC, NAFTA, the end of jobs in America? Do you remember the pardon of Leonard Peltier? Drug running by the CIA in Mena, Arkansas. Gary Webb reports about that in the Mercury News, and later he is murdered. The sanctions on Iraq that killed 1 million people. The reversal of Glass-Steagall, which is all about the 99% and the 1%. I won't ask, and please don't tell me if you voted for William Jefferson Clinton. Hope, change, elect Barack Obama. Remember the Democratic Party? John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, we thought everything was possible, probable, and then they blew it all away. Clinton and Obama got the message, wouldn't you say? Yesterday, all my troubles seemed so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Now it's time for our daily civics lesson. Today's topic, constitutional checks and balances. There are three branches in the United States government as established by the Constitution. First, the legislative branch makes the law. Second, the executive branch executes the law. Last, the judicial branch interprets the law. Each branch has an effect on the other. Well, you've got your impeachment power and your power to declare war and your power to initiate constitutional amendments. Then you've got your veto power and revenue bills and overrides and appointments and check this, check that. Right. Hey, come here. This is my last day anyway. Tomorrow I'm going to swim to Canada if I can find the river and get me this rheumatism looked at and an eye checkup, maybe a heart transplant. If they've got any that will fit an American body. Listen, this is the way it is. This is the world. This is reality. Get over it, get around it, or get used to it. If the president wants to bomb some country or kill some people, he does it. If the military, the police, or the anyone in government wants to put some people in jail, they do it. If the CIA or the FBI or the Pentagon wants to do something, but they don't think you'll like it, they tell the newspapers and TV news and radio to lie to you, and then they do it. And you work your 9 jobs to pay for all this, and if you don't like it and you want to do something about it, but you're afraid if you do something about it, something bad will happen to you, your kids, or you'll lose your 9 jobs, and then where would you be? But you do it anyway. Wondering, when will the guys in black come visit you and cut off your electricity and your arms and your legs? And you wonder, are they even going to cut off my, you know? I think I heard where they cut off other people's, you know. And you're watching and wondering, and they're standing around watching you wonder and worry. And then you realize these guys are very, very good. They already did it.
Do we believe what we believe because we have studied, held them in our hands, rolled them around, and decided? Or was it because we heard it on the TV from some person being paid to deliver the message? It's been a long road. From a stolen election to a government planned attack on September 11, 2001, to 2 invasions based on lies, based on power, on money, to a murdered senator, the one standing in their way would not be moved. We didn't want it to come. We marched, we emailed, we sang, we wrote, we got arrested. But it came anyway, and it is still here. The new American dream is a yellow ribbon free zone. We do not support the troops. The troops are not defending our freedom. They are thugs for the umpire. Hoorah. We heard all about putting a boot up their ass from Toby Keith. He's a brave man to encourage other men to kill men, women, and children for no reason. The real patriots were the Dixie Chicks. We all know that now. Protesters protect our freedom. That's the truth. Think Cynthia McKinney and Cindy Sheehan, not George Bush and John McCain. A hero does not drop bombs on people who are trying to live their lives. Come on. Teachers, priests, ministers, coaches, parents. Please start telling the truth. We can handle the truth. In fact, without the truth, we cannot live. We will die, slowly. Then all at once. We'll collapse. And that will be that. It will be over. A dusty pile of rubble and ho-hos and lies. We need a new dream. Something real, solid to believe in. Truth in our history books. Bread on the table of the poor. We have many heroes from which to draw inspiration. People who gave and are giving their lives to the truth. Patriots, if you will. Leaders, hard workers, whatever you want to call it. They're there. They've always been there, even if we didn't see them, even if they're not famous. They don't give a damn about that. They're driven by something inside of them. And we can draw hope from the absolute fact that that same thing is also inside of us. People like Franz Jagerstatter, Sherwood Ross, Philip Berrigan, Ole Domigar, Dorothy Day, Frank Cordero, Mickey Z, Carl Cabot, Helen Woodson. This message brought to you by the good folks at World News Trust, the Spiritual UN, author James Boomey, the former Rock Creek Free Press, and those individuals who contributed to make it possible for us to bring you the New American Dream radio show. Thanks also go out to the many guests who've taken the time to visit with us over these past months. And to you, thank you for listening.
And now we bring you the New American Dream masterpiece, classic Playhouse Theater, something, something. Real voices with a message that you will not hear on the CBS Nightly News.
American comedian Bill Hicks. Go back to bed, America. Your government has figured out how it all transpired. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control again. Here. Here's American Gladiators. Watch this. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Here's American Gladiators. Here's 56 channels of it. Watch these retards bang their freaking skulls together and congratulate you on living in the land of freedom. Here you go, America. You're free to do as we tell you. You're free to do what we tell you.
This from the Bill Hicks website. In 1993, a breakthrough seemed closer than ever. Rolling Stone had declared Bill Hot Stand-Up Comic of the Year. He began work on Counts of the Netherworld, a high-concept talk show for British TV. He had been nominated for Stand-Up of the Year by the American Comedy Awards for the third time. He wrote a column for the British humor magazine Scallywag and was asked to write for the political journal The Nation. Rock bands flocked to his banner. Radiohead, Rage Against the Machine, and Tool professed their admiration. He had been invited by the New York Public Library for Performing Arts to speak at Lincoln Center in June of 1994. Performance films, screenplays, books, and CD box sets were in various stages of discussion. Perhaps to take advantage of this synergy, Bill moved back to L.A.
Then in June, Bill learned he had cancer. Choosing to keep his illness a secret, he told his family, a few close friends, and went straight back to work. In August of 1993, Bill's brother Steve flew to L.A., and together they packed Bill's belongings into his Jeep and drove to Little Rock, Arkansas, where Bill moved into his parents' home. He'd already recorded both Arizona Bay and Ranton E Minor, with ambitious plans to mix music that he'd recorded into the performance to complement the comedy themes. Throughout the year, Bill underwent chemotherapy on a weekly basis. The tour dates didn't let up. His writing pace accelerated.
On February 7th, 1994, Bill wrote his last words to the world.
I was born William Melvin Hicks on December 16, 1961, in Valdosta, Georgia. Ugh, Melvin Hicks from Georgia. Yee-haw-haw! I already gotten off to life on the wrong foot. I was always awake, I guess you'd say. Some part of me clamoring for new insights and new ways to make the world a better place. All of this came out years down the line in my multitude of creative interests, that are the tools I now bring to the party. Writing, acting, music, comedy, a deep love of literature and books. Thank God for all the artists who've helped me. I'd read these words and off I went, dreaming my own imaginative dreams, exercising them at will, eventually to form bands, comedy, more bands, movies, anything creative. On June 16, 1993, I was diagnosed with having liver cancer that had spread from the pancreas. One of life's weirdest and most worst jokes imaginable. I've been making such progress recently in my attitude, my career, realizing my dreams, that it just stood me on my head for a while. Why me? I would cry out. Why now? Well, I know now there may never be any answers to those particular questions. But maybe in telling a little about myself, we can find some other answers to other questions that might help our way down our own particular paths towards realizing my dream of new hope and new happiness. Amen. I left in love, in laughter, and in truth. And wherever truth, love, and laughter abide, I am there in spirit.
On Saturday, February 26, 1994, Bill Hicks died. He was 32. Well, it's been another long week in Newtown, my hometown, at the end of the empire. It is time for the publication of the new sophomore history textbook, the bread and butter of 3B1K Publishing House, managed by Nico Stados Greenberg in Newtown. Seems nobody is paying much attention to history these days. What is he to do? Well, he's running all over the grounds to talk to people to figure things out, for one thing. We find him just leaving the subtitle bunker. Nick paused at the top of the outside steps with his hand on the railing, catching his breath, taking time that he never took to look over the campus, the town, the river, his house over there on the hill. This has to work. He has to save the company. He won't be the one to fail. Or not. Maybe he will be the one to fail. Who's to stop him? He could fall flat on his face and not have the gumption to put out his hands, as his father had said. He walked back over the interior lawn in Z style, back and forth, to pass safely over the minefield that his father had liked people to think about. He padlocked the gate, tested it. No, he would be the one who would boost pre-orders. That's who he was. The commies are coming. The commies are coming. The terrorists are coming. The criminals are coming. He mumbled to himself to test how they sounded as possible subtitles for this year's sophomore history textbook, The Bread and Butter of the Company. Big bees, he said out loud just as he turned and saw Honey White Bear De La Rosa.
She stood tall and straight. Deep black hair practically everywhere, high cheekbones, spotless white peasant dress, black high heels, gold rings and bracelets about all over. She stood on the sidewalk, watching him walking toward her, like in a Pepsodent or Dentucream commercial. She turned her hips slightly to accent her leg with her bag over her shoulder. She wore her long black hair in a bun. Her makeup hid what she wanted hid. Walk with me, Nicholas, she said. Nick stared into her chest and nodded. As they turned up the sidewalk, Nick got a thought. Have the kids ride it. It's supposed to be third grade level or some crap. And them stupid smucking sophomores should be able to understand at least that crap. She walked like the Sunday racehorse past the stands. Keep up, Nicholas, he heard her growl and put his head down to catch up. So, Nicky. He followed her past a silent sentry receptionist to her office where she began checking things on the desk. She nodded at a chair. He sat like a trained lion. Nick had long been in awe of the black-haired widow realtor. She was an old friend of his father's. And based on looks from his mother, whenever her name came up, maybe a close friend. The office was also the headquarters for the local historical society based on her possession of the bone dust of one Nicostatus Greenberg, the very first, who went and got himself lost in a hearts game in the back rooms of the Garamond to Amos White Bear. And now there they were on display in White Bear De La Rosa Realty. She made mumbly small talk noises while standing over her desk, checking her notes. Nick scanned the walls again. There was no radio, no windows, no magazines. Nothing but the fog of kiwi strawberry perfume. He strained to see her plaque as president of the Daughters of the Last Century in the middle of 20 such gold plaques behind her. The next wall showed 20 photos of her with Nick's great-grandfather, his father, and he, at the start of the parade that led to the band show and the pageant. There were her church photos, baptism, confirmation. Nick thought he was smart enough not to mention religion with Honey, but he was not sure anymore. He wanted to tell her what he really thought of all those nice little stories, the Gospels, that some guy just made up, probably to impress a girl. She knows, he thought. I know, Nicholas. She sat like a cheetah in tall grass and folded her hands on the desk. Well, then, here we go, he thought. Lean forward, mouth open. The pressure you are under. The new book, your wife, your children, the ungrateful department managers. Too much for one little man, I know, darling. Nah, said Nick. I got it. It's not like that, he said, while thinking, what managers? How can I help you? I want to help. He stared into her eyes, brown like birds in a grove of hoop earrings and feathers and bracelets and rings. The pageant, of course, she sat back, scowled over Nick's shoulder, subtly nodded her head to make someone in the doorway go away for now, come back later, I love you. I have an idea, she said. About a new place to put the sales team dunk tank. She got up and began to pace behind her desk like Kennedy during the missile crisis thing. It's always by the toilet, said Nick. It's wearing the grass away, she said. Someone complained, and I absolutely agree. She stretched her arms toward the ceiling. It needs to be moved somewhere else. If not, the whole thing is ruined. The world will end, Nikki. She leaned forward, showing her bosom and humming. Listen, honey, he said. Boom, she said, as she stood and shot up her hands again and made Nick bounce in his chair. See? That's the thing. I got to talk to you. She stopped in the far corner of the room, turned and folded her arms across her chest, now guarding her breasts. He imagined her strong muscles like conveyor belts stretching and pressing her undergarments into a rock-hard ball. He stood and folded his hands at his waist. She... The books, they ain't selling. We got no pre-orders. They don't sell, we don't drink. No beer, no vodka, no Gatorade. We don't eat, you mean, I'm sure. None? No, none for exact. Not none for exact, just not that many. He moved two steps toward her. She backed up, fear in her eyes as her hands clutched her clothing. He stopped. So I think we got to change some things, like in your pageant. She drew a deep breath, gathered herself to charge, and rushed past him, brushing his shoulder into the outer office. He heard her crying somewhere. He heard, "Not my pageant! The world's pageant!" Mick waited for a while until he heard nothing. Then he reached to grab one of the red-striped mints from the glass bowl just as the receptionist moved it just far enough away.
And that's the news from Newtown, where all the police and soldiers are thugs. All the Democrats and journalists are cowards, and all the Homeland Security, COINTELPRO, lone gunmen are about average.
The new American dream means never having to say some question or idea is not valid. We're allowed to ask any questions that we have. There are no wrong questions. There's no hidden black military budget. There are no UFO files Americans cannot see. No JFK documents that will not be opened during our lifetimes. No destroyed RFK murder photos by the LA police. No evidence from Ground Zero taken away before we can even look at it. We are not the USSR of the 1960s. This is supposed to be America. That is our dream, to become America, the new America, the real hope of the world. We have a dream of bringing United States politicians, journalists, and generals who brought about this long 12-year war and debacle to trial, put on TV just like OJ every afternoon, so every American can watch, just like the McCarthy hearings and the JFK funeral procession. What we need is a new American dream, not of new homes and toasters and microwaves, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were. Right now, we live on lies. We subsist on lies, but it's not really living. They want us to be afraid. We cannot be afraid. This wraps up another episode of the New American Dream radio show. We'd like to thank you for joining us tonight. We hope you'll be back next week and every week right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Don't forget to check our archives at newdream.us or subscribe to the podcast. Thank you and good night, Mike.
And thanks to our guests. To get the archives of the show from February 2011, go to the show.newamericandream.info. And as always, we apologize for our mistakes and plan to make fewer mistakes next week. To contact the show, either Chuck or me or any of our guests, write to me at nwestiowa@gmail.com. And as always, we wish to acknowledge the work of South Dakota stone artisan Borglum Borglumson as he works to make over Mount Rushmore, put the real face of American history up there in stone. Lee Harvey Oswald, Sirhan Sirhan, Mark David Chapman, and James Earl Ray. Follow the ongoing project at looserock.com, rollingstones.com, and jackrubyrubyridge.com. To help support the show, please purchase one of our Tom Jefferson Rolling in His Grave handy campfire rotisseries for the hobo in your family, or get one of our family-sized Obamaville Tom Jefferson rotisseries for the busy family on the move from town to town, woods to woods, made in Korea. And so good night to my friends, Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. Good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Daniel Lewin. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Emily Parker. Good night, Ben Wheeler. Good night, Crystal Campbell. Good night, Nancy Lanza. Good night, James Foley, and good night, Stephen Sotloff. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. Good night, Mohammed Atta, and good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.